You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle. Before we talk about Dark Phoenix, the X-Men movie that bombed and its projected huge losses and where that fits with other bombs, we do want to talk about a film that Justin Chang has alerted us to in the past, a 14-and-a-half-hour Argentinian epic, La Flor.
Yes. This is playing, starts tonight. Get your tickets now.
All in one sitting.
Not in one sitting, although that would be a, you know, it's most conversations about this movie start with the extreme length. But of course, 14 and a half hours is nothing in the binging era. Think about it as the new Netflix 10-parter that just dropped. You know, so in your living room, yeah. It's playing at the Lemley Music Hall over the next 3 days. It is a commitment. I went through it myself, and I am a richer person for it. This is a film from the Argentinian director Mariano Ginas, and it's playing as part of the Locarno in Los Angeles festival, which is basically the Locarno Film Festival is held every fall, and this is a selection of highlights from that festival, films receiving their LA premieres. This La Flor is, I'll be brief, even though the movie is not. It's six episodes. Five of the six feature the same quartet of lead actresses, and it is basically a fantasia on cinema. They're playing different roles throughout. Part one is a mummy horror sci-fi film. Part two is this musical melodrama. Part three is a 5.5-hour spy thriller in which all four of them play assassins, and you get to know each one's backstory. Found it completely riveting. And then part four and five and six just get increasingly weird and meta. It's a hoot. It's an intellectual feast. It's great storytelling, and it's about storytelling. And I don't think you should miss it if you love movies and you live in L.A.
La Flor, the Argentinian epic at Lemley's Music Hall in Beverly Hills as a part of the Locarno in L.A. Film Festival. Well, Dark Phoenix, as I was mentioning, an X-Men film that completely bombed. Our critics warned you about the movie, and apparently people heeded that warning. With us to talk about where Dark Phoenix sits compared to other big-budget bombs of the past, Sean Fennessy, editor-in-chief, chief content officer at the sports and pop culture website The Ringer. He also is the host of the Big Picture podcast. Sean, thank you for joining us.
Larry, it's my pleasure.
So what went wrong with Dark Phoenix?
Ooh, where to begin? Virtually everything. I suppose it starts back in 2000 when there was an X-Men movie, but we find ourselves almost 20 years later at the conclusion, theoretically, of this saga. And the film is what feels like many films Frankenstein together. And as you guys talked about last week, this movie does not work, and critics know that it does not work. But more so, I think fans know that it doesn't work. And it's the victim of a series of complex industry and creative problems. We've got a movie that is at the mercy of a merger between Fox and Disney. We've got a movie that has been shot and then reshot and then reshot once more. We've got a movie that has changed character names, alien races that have been redefined midstream. We've just got a series of quagmires throughout the production of the film, and I think audiences smelled it a long ways away.
So I've seen that the estimate is it could lose $100 to $120 million.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing to, I think, try to understand. As all of you guys know, the way we receive information about what the budget of a film is a bit opaque. So sometimes we hear a movie cost $150 million. What does that mean? Does that mean every single dollar was spent on the making of the movie? Sometimes. It depends on how the studio delivers that information to us. Sometimes there's the marketing budget, which can exceed $30, $40, $50 million for certain films. So how much information we have publicly makes it hard to understand, did this movie lose $100 million? Did it lose $150 million? We'll never actually know the truth of that number, but Dark Phoenix has been reported to have cost $200 million. It has already made worldwide $145 million. That seems not so bad. But all of those hidden costs that we're not talking about, that we don't understand, make this seem like a bigger failure.
So, Amy Nicholson, do you have nominations for biggest bombs of all time?
Is it wrong to start off by saying that I kind of am fascinated by bombs as a whole because to me what a bomb is, great, then I'm right in my zone. Because what I think is so fascinating about a bomb and what kind of draws me to film in general as an anthropologist is a giant studio movie like Dark Phoenix is saying, we think we know what the American people want. I have a gamble on what's in the zeitgeist. I have a feeling about what they're willing to spend their money on. And when they're wrong, it's fascinating because it's kind of a snapshot of what we care about as audiences, which is why as a critic, I've always been as interested in blockbuster films as indie films. And so with that in mind, like, I'm excited that superhero movies are bombing. Is that okay? Can I just say that out loud?
Totally. Sure.
Yes. You won't get an argument.
It was reassuring when Solo bombed last year because it's like, because when it was a terrible movie, and it was good to know that even Star Wars is not infallible.
All right.
Well, and remember, George Lucas also brought us Strange Magic.
I don't remember that, actually.
Yeah, lucky you.
Charles, you have any animated versions of bombs to share?
There was Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within, that had a built-in audience of tens of millions from the games. It was a complete bomb, took down the studio with it. Titan AE was another one that ended Fox Animation.
Now that's something. That's quite a credit to be so bad that you actually destroyed the studio that made it.
Yes, lost something like $100 million, and is one of the very worst films Don Bluth ever made.
Wow,
so, which is saying something.
Well, and quickly along those lines too, Heaven's Gate, you know, which the much maligned and for many grievously misunderstood Michael Cimino epic, which famously bankrupted United Artists.
Yeah, so, well, and so you say famously misunderstood. Some of the bombs have actually had a kind of renewed appreciation. That's one.
Heaven's Gate has absolutely undergone, I think, a critical reclamation. So has Ishtar.
Yeah, and such an Elaine moment, an Elaine May moment. And I think Ishtar is finally getting its due, which is sort of nice to see.
Because that was always the film where it was theorized the people making it were having so much fun that it left the audience out and there was nothing left for the people watching it to enjoy. Sean, what do you stand out as some of the biggest bombs of all time?
Well, I guess the world historical classic is Cleopatra, the 1963 Liz Taylor adaptation, which is not a good film and also quite long, not quite as long as that 14-hour film.
It feels it.
It does. The thing that's interesting, though, and you mentioned Heaven's Gate, and I think you can point to The Cotton Club, the Francis Ford Coppola film. You can talk about Ishtar. You can talk about Bonfire of the Vanities. The thing that is different about some of those movies is there was a lot of journalism and attention paid on them, and I think the reclamation project is because we understand the arc of the failure. And now, with a lot of the movies that fail, you mentioned Solo. You know, you can think of a frivolous movie like R.I.P.D., which was a very bad Ryan Reynolds, Jeff Bridges movie that came out in 2013. No one saw that movie and no one cared. There was no journalism about why that movie failed. It just didn't work and it wasn't interesting. And the films in the 70s and 80s that tended to fail were part of a different kind of industry. Much of the movie industry now is owned by massive corporations. And so there is an expectation that they have to make a huge number. It's not personal. It's not a small business anymore. And when it was a smaller business, it felt more fun and more interesting to understand why Liz Taylor flopped so badly. And we're just in a different movie economy.
And is it harder to understand today international exhibition than in the past? I mean, particularly what, say, Chinese filmgoers are going to appreciate.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, we mentioned Dark Phoenix earlier. Dark Phoenix has made $140 million. $100 million has come internationally. That was just not a part of the calculus even 25 years ago. China wasn't showing American films in their theaters 12 years ago. So we find ourselves in an interesting moment for what is a flop. Solo made quite a bit of money, but did it make enough money? What is enough money? How do we legislate what is a success now?
And that's one reason for the popularity of the comic book type movies is that violence plays everywhere. There are different attitudes about romance or comedy in other parts of the world, but the good guy shooting the bad guy with 70 bullets, as Amy counted, that plays anywhere.
Well, important to mention, too, in the case of Solo, I mean, this is not going to kill off Star Wars films. And Dark Phoenix, its disastrous showing is not going to kill off Marvel films, certainly. So the genre is going to continue.
I think what's interesting about it is this might be the best thing that could have happened to X-Men. I think people forgetting that this was a version of X-Men is what Disney wants.
We'll continue with Sean Fennessy, joining us from The Ringer, where he's editor-in-chief and chief content officer. He's the host of the Big Picture podcast as well, along with our Amy Nicholson, Justin Chang, and Charles Solomon. We'll talk about the biggest bombs in movie history as we continue on Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle. Our critics with us this week are Justin Chang, Charles Solomon, and Amy Nicholson, and also joining us for our conversation about the biggest bombs in film of all time, Sean Fennessy of The Ringer, the sports and pop culture website. You can also put your nomination for the biggest film bomb of all time on our Film Week page at kpcc.org. Sean, you have a list of bombs here beyond Cleopatra.
Should we talk about some more recent failures?
Yeah, yeah, let's do that.
There was a little bit of chatter about The Lone Ranger, Gore Verbinski's 2013 Johnny Depp adaptation.
That was painful.
Not a great success.
I would say it was an underappreciated film.
I would agree.
I think Armie Hammer really understood that character. What are you going to do with a gigantic, handsome man like Armie Hammer except make a joke out of how wonderful he is?
I agree. I tend to like the movie, and I think the reclamation of these movies is a fascinating thing that happens how they live on.
We have enough movies with horses running across trains and buildings.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, to Sean's point about the conversations around the films of the 60s and 70s and what we have today, that I think can be more destructive is Twitter buzz, which just sort of starts. Like, it started around RIPD and it started around Lone Ranger, that it was going to be bad before anybody ever really saw it. And that just solidifies for some reason into a fact before the movie comes out.
And troubled production often is read, oh, the film is going to be a mess. Mm-hmm. But that's not always the case. Sometimes, you know, films that you hear were difficult productions actually end up as gems.
You know what's an interesting...
Ratatouille.
That's right. Yeah. That's an interesting version of that, too, is we talked about Solo. And Rogue One was another Star Wars film that came out a few years ago, which also had a very similarly troubled production. The director was replaced. It was rewritten halfway through. But we didn't know that before the movie came out. And so when we saw the film, we thought, oh, this must have been a rosy production. We knew the directors of Solo were fired halfway through the production of that film. So that does matter with how we perceive it.
And last year, the opposite case with Bohemian Rhapsody, a hugely troubled production that became a record-breaking, like a smash.
That's
so
exactly right.
We're all so
happy about it.
And I think it doesn't matter if it's a great filmmaker making the movie. We saw the Wachowskis in 2008 made Speed Racer, which is a film that a lot of people admire to this day, but was a massive bomb, hugely failed. Well, I guess the color and the excitement and the verve aesthetics of that film.
But it was a movie about racing, and you had no idea where they were in the race.
It's true. It's experimental. Yeah. It's always hard to say what's not going to work. I think it was evident that something like Battlefield Earth, though, was not going to work.
Battlefield Earth, the John Travolta film that was a real personal project for him from an L. Ron Hubbard story.
Yes, and I think the minute you saw the trailer, I think most people knew this is not for me. This doesn't look very good.
One of the biggest bombs from Guy Ritchie was King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. And again, you said sometimes opaque to get the financial information, but the estimate I'm looking at is $150 million loss from that film.
And sometimes it doesn't matter because Guy Ritchie immediately got a job and began to direct Aladdin for Disney. So sometimes it's not held against the filmmaker. You never can tell.
Maybe it should be.
But I do think it's interesting that sometimes the perception of a bomb is the truth, even when the numbers don't back it up. I mean, you guys know that I'm obsessed with Tom Cruise. And there's this idea that his career tanked in 2005, the year of Oprah, when he jumped on the couch. But the Oprah jumping on the couch thing happened right before he opened War of the Worlds, which is actually his biggest hit. But if you ask anybody, that's the year his career died.
Who would guess that was his biggest hit?
His biggest box office hit. It was right when everybody said his career was over, and he ended up getting fired from Paramount that year. His production company had to leave the studio because there was this perception he was a flop, even though he'd never done better.
All right. Any other films, Justin, that you want to add to this list?
It's a Wonderful Life was perceived as a huge flop, barely recouping its budget when it grossed only $3.3 million when it opened. And it's now, of course, a holiday perennial. So.
Yeah, Casablanca was seen as a surefire bomb, and it happened one night. Claudette Colbert dismissed that when she finished it.
So a lot of these perceptions really are not necessarily true.
But I will say, I mean, to that point, you know, I do a podcast where we're going through the AFI Top 100, and over half of the films on that list were the number one film of that year, which I find to be
really?
A little depressing.
Wow, yeah.
The idea that box office clout really does define what films we remember. It's the outliers that are the films.
See,
like
I would choose
lives.
To look at the opposite. Well, maybe people's taste, the general public, is better than critics want to give it credit for. Yeah. Yeah, maybe it's sort of an anti-elitism.
Yeah, hey, Larry, try getting folks off the street to do this show.
Bill, we do have elite critics. Bill in the San Gabriel Valley wants to bring up the Disney film John Carter, which was a massive loser. And that one that was, you know, rather eagerly anticipated at some point.
It was
before
Andrew
bad,
Stanton.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. Before some, again, the behind-the-scenes news started coming out.
Yeah, and we think of Disney as this indestructible force, this train that cannot be stopped. But we're talking about John Carter. We're talking about Solo. We're talking about movies that they made that just did not work.
A Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah, A Wrinkle in Time last year. And no one is impervious to this kind of failure.
Well, I remember when Eddie Murphy was riding high and, you know, his movie's doing so well. And then he does The Adventures of Pluto Nash, which lost nearly $100 million.
The Haunted Mansion didn't exactly burn up the box office either.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, this was after Beverly Hills Cop, Trading Places, Nutty Professor, terrific film, Dr. Dolittle. Yeah, yeah. So all of that for Eddie Murphy. Again, you can nominate your biggest box office bomb on our Film Week page at kpecc.org. Rob mentions after the original Star Wars, Disney tried to answer with Black Hole. What was the name of that?
The Black Hole.
It was The Black Hole.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, a forgettable film.
Yes, that was also around the time they did The Black Cauldron, too.
Is that is the black hole a description of what happened to its prophet?
Pretty much.
With us, Sean Fennessy of The Ringer. Sean, do you have some other titles to add to our bomb list?
Well, I'm curious about, from the critics, actually, if a movie fails, does that recontextualize how you think about it? Do you have any kind of empathy for a performance around a movie? Because we can list 100 of these films, but I think we're never going to know the truth of how much they've lost. But the way that they live on is a part of the problem here.
Well, to Amy's point earlier, which is that we all pay too much attention to box office now, I think, even as with companies like Netflix in the mix, how well a movie's actually doing becomes is not being
unknowable.
Reported. So, you know, but something like, I remember this Danny Boyle's movie Steve Jobs from 2015, which I actually think is a terrific picture.
Love that.
And
really?
As with every movie we've now named here that you kind of hate, Charles. Steve Jobs, I think, is a terrific movie that, you know, fell so short of expectations that in a lot of the conversations, even with colleagues, there was this reverse perception like, oh, yeah, that was bad. It just didn't work. And it's like, no, actually, it worked quite well. It just fell short of expectations. And so it shouldn't be, you know, if you don't like the movie, that's one thing. But I think there's sometimes this reverse correction where we're looking at, you know, where we mistakenly call something bad just because it didn't pay off financially.
I would agree with that. Even this week, the buzz on Shaft was so bad, and Justin and I both had to go buy a ticket and see it last night at the midnight showings.
Oh, critics were not invited.
Oh,
to
they
special
were.
Screening.
They were, but we couldn't make
you
them.
Couldn't. Yeah. Okay.
And I will say for myself, I was absolutely dreading seeing Shaft because the buzz on it was so bad, and I was much more positive than I expected.
Yeah, wasn't
out
as
of it.
So it made you, in having the bar being lowered for you, made you a bit.
I know.
Kinder
how am I just going
to
review in a bubble? That seems the safest.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, our Film Week critics this week, Amy Nicholson, Justin Chang, and Charles Solomon. Our thanks to Sean Fennessy. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Editor-in-Chief, Chief Content Officer at the pop culture and sports website and podcast network The Ringer. He hosts the Big Picture podcast. Have a terrific weekend from all of us at Film Week. I'll be away for our next Film Week program, and a guest host will be filling in for me. I have a lot of movies coming out next week. We'll get to those. You'll hear all about them on the next Film Week here on 89.3 KPCC.